Danny Fisher. This is the Mile High Show. This is our segment called Kaleidoscope. This is where I myself, Danny Fisher, artist, musician, performer, and housewife, tell you to get off up your lazy butts and get creative, basically. We're going to sit here and talk every week to different artists in the area. And when I say artist, I'm not just talking about visual artists with a paintbrush. I'm not just talking about some dude with a guitar. Sometimes I am. But I'm also talking about musicians. I mean, well, that's a given. Performers, actors, writers, winemakers, nursing home workers, chefs. We're talking about living your art, living your life as art. And this is for the Quad City area. I guess it's really a five city area, but I don't know the fancy word. Do you guys know this fancy word that means five instead of quad?
That would be quintuple.
Quint city.
Quint city, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Prescott Valley, Chino, Paulden, Dewey, Humboldt, this whole entire area around here. And we're bringing you closer to the folks that are already living their dream doing art, and we want to inspire you to get to that point where you feel comfortable doing what you love for a living. So today on the show, we've got some writers and performers as well. We've got KJ over here to my right. You can't see me. By the way, we're at Granite Mountain Brewing on Cortez Street doing this audio here with Matt Santos, and I'm Danny Fisher. If you are an artist and you want to be on the show, or you have a question, or you want to be part of my Mile High Artist League, where we show art here at Granite Mountain Brewing, and I also help you get to the point where you're promoting yourself, you can find me on Facebook. I'm Danny Fisher, DaniFisher. My email is howlinhands, howlinhands at hotmail.com. And my phone number is 610-823-3742. You can also find me on DannyFisher.gallery. That's my website. And all of these people that I'm interviewing, you can most likely find most of them on my friends list on Facebook if you missed their plug information, or just contact me for it. It's no problem. So we've got KJ, and we've got over here
Nebulae Synapticus. Thanks for having me, Danny.
No trouble. And is it fair to call you guys writers and performers? Is that what you prefer? Is there a better word for that?
I'd say, wait.
And just so we're clear, I'm going to wait for two answers.
Okay. Sure.
I ask a question. Alrighty.
Writers, poets, and performers. Sure.
Yep.
Right. And I know we don't want to talk too much about it, but I was just at one of your wonderful events and was fortunate enough to get to perform and donate a piece of pottery. Yeah. Tell us what, just go ahead and we'll start with you, KJ. Plug yourself. Where can we find you? What do you do, and what are you doing? And then we're going to get to you, Adam.
Sure. I'm a poet and a teacher, and I've been doing both for a long time now. I guess I've only been doing the performance part of the poetry for the past 5 years, with putting my whole art and heart and life into it. But living in Prescott now. If you want to find me in the interwebs, you can find me. I perform and write under the name KJ Ink, KJINK, and or KJ Bleeds Ink, and I got YouTube channel that I occasionally put something on, or all over Facebook. I do use that a lot, so you can find me there. I have an album, a spoken word album, that's on Bandcamp that you can find under KJ Ink as well. So
nice.
So, yeah, there you go.
How about yourself over here?
As Nebulae Synapticus, I perform. Me and KJ got this open mic that Danny was just talking about. It's happening every second Wednesday.
Here in Prescott.
It's on McCormick Street, 117 North McCormick Street.
Yep.
At the Bistro. And it's a wonderful place. I think we can talk a little more about that later. But you can reach me at deciphersyn@gmx.com, deciphersyn@gmx.com. If you're interested in what we're doing, you want to know what kind of scene it is, and you know if your poetry would be appropriate, it probably is. We'd love to have you. We'd love to hear everybody's voices in this area, and we get inspired when we hear other people's words come out in an inspirational way, coming from the heart, coming from the mind, the thoughts that you have. The things that you think and feel right here in this local area. We have a lot of talent, and it's coming out of the woodwork. So,
yeah, we just started a few months ago. Had our first our inaugural event in October, and it's been kicking off pretty awesomely since then. Yeah, just amazing support from the community each month.
That was
a
full house.
Sure. Thank you for noticing. Yeah. No. Yeah.
That was a full house. It was amazing.
The word is getting out each month, and it seems to be building up a little.
What does the proceeds? Part of the proceeds go where and what?
To Wild Horse Ranch and Rescue down in Cave Creek. The owner, Kim Maher, the owner of the Bistro, is a animal philanthropist, and she works.
She has worked
like tirelessly for years, rescuing horses, donkeys, dogs, you name it, and finding them better homes, taking care of them, and finding them good homes.
And there's also the Have a Sioux Pups.
Oh, this is amazing.
And that's run by Danny Schott mostly. And she obviously works really closely with Kim Maher.
Mm-hmm.
And really incredible work that they put together. You know, I think it's something like 85% of the unwanted dogs in the Grand Canyon area are now, you know, finding homes.
Yeah. They're no longer strays.
And the Have a Sioux Pups is being trusted to remove them instead of them needing to put them down while they're still there. And that just alone is...
It's
fantastic. Yeah. So the work that Danny Schott is doing is wonderful. She takes in vets and people down in the canyon and gets some amazing work done.
Yeah, and the Bistro is also an art house. I mean, they're all about supporting artists and finding ways for artists to, you know, live their dream. So it's very a synonymous, if I might say, with this show. So
right, and all artists, we do this because we love it. You can't take it away from us. You can't pry it from our cold, dead hands. However, there's still a price. Not only is there a price for how we live our lives to get all this done, but there is a price. And speaking of prices, I want to tell you about Amazon. To go online and have some shopping done on Amazon, please first go to www.milehighshow.com and shop away. You'll be directed to our Amazon Prime login as usual. No additional cost, nothing to do, but the Mile High Show will get a little kickback when you sell, and it'll help us keep our lights on so that we can keep bringing this to you. Click the link in the middle of the Mile High Show homepage and bookmark it on your browser. And go shopping. Go get me some paintbrushes. No. Anyway, I'm getting a little low. So
that's a great way to support the cause.
By all means.
You know.
Right. That's and great. The first question I wanted to ask, because I have a children's book and I write a little bit, but I have no aliases. When I used to do blogging, I had Gypsy Cowgirl, but I'm not sure.
Gypsy
I need
Cowgirl.
Yes, but I need
Giddy
to know.
Up.
But I need to know why the aliases, and this is very common with writers. Why an alias?
I guess I'll catch the brunt of that one. As Nebulia Synapticus, that name really came from a lot of really deep soul searching and finding out who I am and who I am to become through my writing. There's a lot that comes out through really diving into poetry and finding the words to express yourself and express your perspective on the world. And, I have no problem using my birth name, Adam Saxa. I'm proud of that name. I enjoy it.
It's not because you're afraid, it's because you're becoming.
Right. Yeah. It's redefining. It's giving myself a new space to explore, and that can be a bit nebulous at times.
He never gets tired of saying that. He never gets tired.
Really?
But
he loves that word.
It's also a nebula is also a place where stars are actually created and born in the universe, and if you've seen them, I mean, that to me, that the pictures that we get back from satellites that go out and explore the galaxy and the far reaches of space, that's pure poetry to me. And so it sort of gives me something to try to live up to.
Because the show is so new, I haven't had a lot of time to talk about creative visualization. And one of the things I taught when I went to nursing homes and I did with clay with folks, and when I was doing therapy, when I was doing art therapy, I would say, for instance, we made this piece of pottery on the wheel. We say this bowl symbolizes your life. Now fill it with things that you want in your life because maybe they will happen.
Oh.
You know, some kids would put a puppy for Christmas and other people would put, like, you know, all kinds of stuff. Nature, they want to get out more hiking and they put balls in. But you're creatively visualizing your life. You're projecting yourself through your own creativity because we have that power. Do you have anything to add on the whole name changing?
No, absolutely not. No.
Nothing?
No.
I'm just KJ.
Well, I know
you're both good talkers. That's why I invited you.
I have my moments. Let me... Sorry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't really tell you the whole... I mean, there's no way to kind of unpack my writer name, nickname, whatever, without telling you the whole story of my life. It has been an
evolution.
Well,
that's what we're here for.
But we only have an hour, I'm told. So.
No, it's not. He said we had longer.
No, he said strictly an hour.
No, he didn't.
you got to wrap this up, Tony.
Yeah. That's doo-doo.
But yeah, it's like you said, it's very much about becoming. It's about, you know, to sound cliche, of course, but, you know, finding myself and finding my voice and not being afraid of that. And I don't know, you know, I was born, I was given one name, I was adopted, I was given another name, and then years later when I was 13, I heard KJ for the first time, and that name kind of slowly grew on me. But I didn't fully understand it or what it would mean or the significance of kind of, you know, choosing the power of choosing a name for yourself. You know, I mean, there's a lot of power in that, and there's certain cultures in the world who definitely understand that, and once you hit puberty, you've, like, given the opportunity to choose your own name and something like that, and it didn't quite happen in that way, but in a way it did. And once KJ came into place, it's everything else just kind of made sense, and, like, yes, finally I was able to be reborn and be myself all in the same moment.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you for boldly sharing that.
Oh, thanks.
That's what I'm looking for. So the format of the show, I explained to you a little bit of how it works, but the way we do it is you plug yourself. You already did that. You tell us how you got involved in knowing this was your passion and your dream, your art form, what you do. Like, some people have a story that they knew when they were five because their parents were very supportive and, you know, send them to classes or build them a guitar from scratch. And then you have other people that they waited till they're 35 and they're like, well, I'm a corporate master in my own universe. And now I want to be an artist. And how do I do it? You know, or they pick up their first guitar in college and they have a different major. So it's, well, the first thing I do is ask, you know, how you got to the point where you knew this is what was for you, the moment when you were like, I know this is what I'm doing.
Sure. That's a huge moment. I think there's a Twain quote, and I'm probably going to, you know,
paraphrase it
terribly, but, you know, there's like two important days of your life, the day you're born and the day you learn why, the day you figure out why.
Yeah.
And I definitely can have read that post that moment and been like, yes, that I can relate to that. That applies to me. But yeah, it was a very circuitous route, a lot of detours. I've been a poet. I've been writing since I was about 13, 14, and I just kind of found it in myself one day, and or poetry found me, however that works. And and I loved it and embraced it, and it definitely enlivened me and enriched my life in a new way that didn't really have anything to do with the people around me. A lot of it was just kind of music and what I was reading, and it was like a private little world for me, and I loved it without a doubt. And I lived that way and enjoyed the fruits of that for a good 5-6 years, and then kind of fell off that horse in a terrible way in my early 20s, and lost the gift, or lost the voice, or lost my, you know, that part of myself. And you know, slowly over a course of many years, kind of came back to it. I like I said, I've only been performing for 5 years now or so, but that was after, you know, I discovered slam poetry, performance poetry, when I was about in 2001 or so, or 2002, yeah. Junior, senior year of college at ASU, and it was amazing to see that art form expressed in such ways. You know, I've known about poetry for a long time, but I've never seen people do it like that.
Yeah.
And so that was really exciting, and I kept going back and watching the slams and trying to kind of plug in and express myself in such a bold and confident way, but I couldn't. I did not have the confidence. I did not have the just didn't believe myself like that. I'd go up there and I'd, you know, had lots of words, but I'd get up there and they'd just tremble out of my mouth, you know, like the rest of me. So after I graduated and became a teacher, I just gave that up and kind of forgot about it. You know, teaching consumed my life in a beautiful way, and I love that as well, and I'm thankful for
that's
that.
That's an art form.
It
yeah.
is. Yeah, it's absolutely. And you know, thank God to my mentor, you know, kind of gave me eyes to see and the ability to appreciate teaching for all that it can be. And then fast forward again, then I was hardly a poet at all. You know, for about 7-8 years, I was hardly a poet. And it wasn't until I had the greatest breakthrough of my life and or awakening or so many other words you could apply to that. But in that day, words couldn't stop coming out of me. And one day I remembered everything, all the best parts of myself that I had lost over the years due to trauma or drama or heartbreak or all those things that kind of tear away at us and denigrate us as time goes on. All the effects of that just disappeared, and I was back to, like, you know, my art and the best parts of myself. So that was exciting, and pretty much like from that day, I've been writing ever since. And then within a couple months of that, I had my first opportunity to like perform for the first time in 8 years, and I did an old poem that's just been in my head that whole time. And it was at an art gallery opening or art exhibit opening, and there was a poet there from San Francisco reading, and then a couple other random poets jumped up at the end and did something, and I was like, oh, here's finally, you know, I've been craving like the opportunity to like say something, and finally.
Is that the Like Water Like Sun?
No, that's the Nobody's Business.
Oh, okay.
So I just like got up there and I spit this poem, and the reaction that I got from people afterwards was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. I just had never, but I also finally, you know, 7 years later, had the confidence and the know-how and the strength to like really like own those words and put them out there and look people in the eye like I couldn't do before. And then people came up to me and the look in their eyes just was really like a brick upside the head. That's the best analogy I've had for it since that day. It made me feel like this is what I've been sitting on and wasting for all these years. I've been quiet. I've been, you know, mild mannered for so long, and that was no longer the case. I was awake and I was here to say it. You know, I wasn't gonna take it all for granted. It's time to speak. You know,
right? And so that reflected. Go. And yep. I have a similar. It's funny. I had a little bit similar stuff with Eve on how I got started being an artist. Our stories were so close, but parallel. I taught for 20 years, and I taught art. And my parents kind of pushed me into, well, not pushed me, you know, they were supportive, but they wanted me to have a teaching job because the 401k and the benefits
sure.
and the
no,
summer's off.
Yeah.
And I did it and I loved it and I enjoyed it. And I wound up turning down really good district jobs with big money to teach in inner city. And I did all this, but I felt like the teaching prepped me.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Because there's not only organization that you had to learn, but you're releasing knowledge. So you get knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have, you know, 10, 11 years of, well, however long it was before I started performing again, but all those kids are supporting me and backing me up. All that experience and all those classrooms, like, that's what gave me the confidence
right.
that, you know, I could go in there and make a fool of myself and they appreciated it or got something out of it, then I can do it, you know, in front of any room. And slowly but surely, that's come to be.
Great. How about yourself over here? And this, you still got to tell me your name again so I know it by heart. And I'm sorry I don't by now.
Oh, you can just call me Nebs.
Nebs. Okay, yeah. Nebula.
Nebulius Nebticus.
Okay, Nebs. Nebs as much.
Yeah,
I can
just
do
call
that.
Me Nebs. I call him Nebuchadnezzar for short.
I know who that is. How do I know who that is?
I'm just kidding.
I forget what that's from, but I know.
So, well, yeah, if you're in the Christmas spirit, then that's when...
I was just a joke. He's never heard me say
it's
that before.
In a movie
but
it's, somewhere, yeah. I'm sure there's books.
But it is shorter than Nebulae Synapticus, so it works.
Right, and I'm interested in your story, but I've also noticed you have a different. You've got like it's not a different, as in more sensitive to life, but a more sensitive perception of, or a sensitive perception of where your art should be heard too.
Yeah, I guess in a sense, I like to find the ears that are looking for the words that I have to share. But it can be a crapshoot, you know. You don't necessarily know who is going to really connect with what you have to say, and where you're coming from in life, and where you are at the point right there when you're sharing a piece. I first started connecting with words when I was in second grade, and I started writing stories mostly, and it was for school, it was for class assignments, and my writing was, believe it or not, extremely violent. Mm. Which for a lot of people who have heard my work, you know, could come as a real
what?
Big surprise.
Really? No but way.
But it's
did that, it get analyzed?
Yes, it did get analyzed. My teachers were extremely distraught in some cases with the stuff that I wrote, and it took just a grand effort from my mother to really give me the support that I needed and give the school the reason to take a step back and consider that maybe that was a worthwhile art form, that was, and a worthwhile way to express emotion, and that as long as that violence stays on the page, that maybe that's a good place for it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was a difficult, I mean, and that was years and years. It did get to the point where in high school I was kicked out of a class and sent to a counselor, and had a full meeting with all of my teachers, you know, so that was like 8 different periods, you know, and the principal and the counselor and my mother in the room. And it finally got down to the point, you know, when they were really pressing my mom for answers as to what was going on with me. And she said, you know, I wonder if Stephen King's mom had to deal with this.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the room fell silent, and in that silence, I think there was a lot that was realized on all sides of the table, including my own, and that culminated into a sort of building into a maturity. I mean, I had realized the power of my words in a lot of ways, but
bless
still
your
that. I mean, that realization really comes through again with every poem that I write, and
yeah.
I think allowing the humility in myself to realize that I still don't have it all. I still, you know, as much as I write a poem and I really connect it, I feel with it, I could share it with an audience and have a whole audience feel it, but really I have nothing if I can't do that again and have it be completely fresh and new and embody the content that I'm trying to get across to an audience. And so I think it's really, you know, humbling to me to just understand that the full power of words and the long tradition of poets going back through the ages. Yeah, I guess I'll
right.
Stop now.
No, it's funny you said, like, what a blessing that your mother supported you in this, because that's the thing. Some of us, like, you know, mm-hmm. you had to change your name 100
yeah,
times.
Sure.
Finally,
sure.
You're like, screw it, I'll pick
sure.
my own.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but for you, yeah. you had that mom behind you. It doesn't mean that you struggle any less. They're just different ways. I always used to compare myself to my cousin because she got to study abroad and her mom was a teacher, and like my parents were bikers and hippies and they separated, and but she went through different struggles, mm-hmm. you know, that
absolutely.
I went through. But
yeah, I mean, and I don't even know if I could be here and accomplish what you know what I've been able to do with poetry and have it be such a part of my life if it wasn't for her influence and her support. You know,
right.
It's really
and
nice.
On a comparison, my friend, when we moved home from Pennsylvania, my husband used to, and my children used to work at an apple orchard. The apple orchard It's Fracon Farms in Pennsylvania. And then they have the other farm, which is the brewing company. And they make hard ciders off of the apples from the orchard and et cetera, et cetera. Hank is one of the sons of this big family of farmers. And he is like toe blonde hair, looks totally not like his other siblings, is totally out there. And he's an entrepreneur. He runs the brewery. He had another business. Like, and I used to board my horses there. We got kind of close. He's just a really cool, charismatic guy with lots, his hand into lots of meddling of other businesses. And he's turned into this amazing folk. He was dopey at school. They thought he had ADHD. They told him since he didn't read right at, you know, first grade that he was going to be a dummy and all this stuff. But the funniest story, and I'm going to have to sneeze.
Bless you. Oh,
bless Thank you. The funniest story is, his dad, you know, they're farmers. They kill the deer that come on their orchard and try to eat the apples, and then they eat them. The family takes them and eats them, but they went hunting every season. We live in Pennsylvania. Hank went to school in first grade, and it was art class, and he drew a picture of a bloody pheasant and him holding the bloody pheasant. And the principal called his dad, and the, you know, psychologist looked at it, on and on and on. The principal called his dad, and his dad comes in his britches with, you know, crap all over him from the orchard. And he's like, this better be really good if you're messing with me during harvest season. And the principal's like, well, you know, and the psychologist, well, you know, he's got this picture of him killing a pheasant, and there's blood everywhere. And Hank's dad was like, you nimrods, we just went pheasant hunting 2 days ago. Like,
it's perfectly natural. Yeah, this
right,
this is what happens.
What context does to someone, and maybe, I mean, I'm not insinuating anything or judging, but maybe because of that experience that you had to go through with all the judgment just for being yourself, maybe that's why you're so careful when you tell, you know, when you're being considerate and what's courteous when you let your art out, because you're still wanting it to just flow where it belongs. And I can completely respect that and appreciate that.
True. Yeah. Don't want to rub people the wrong way.
Right. And it's probably from that. So what you get out of this, that's you've got there, you knew how to get there. What do you personally get from, you found yourself and you're doing it? Like, you know, fame's always a goal. Those are goals. You know, there's fame, there's money and all that. But what do you really get?
Oh, that keeps
you
going. Lovely.
Right? There is a price for us to go through these struggles and live this way. The same way there's a price for some guy, CEO of some corporate agency. He's got a price too, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's a lot of sacrifice that comes with doing your art and being uncompromising in your integrity and the quality that you want to deliver.
Yeah.
So.
Right. So what do you get from it? You want to go first?
Go ahead. Say something.
Okay.
On there.
Fine. what do I get? First and foremost, no, I can't list them, but just coming what comes out of my top of my head, I complete the circle. Of energy that's coming into me and energy that is going out of me. It's and by completing that circle, I'm not bottling stuff up. I'm not poisoning myself with, you know, words I haven't said, or, you know, the experiences that, you know, I'm dreaming of but not fulfilling. My words absolutely are, you know, the sword and the stone for in the good fight that I'm entangled in. So there's that. It's because of my poetry, I and my voice and everything else, I am more alive. I'm not a lesser alive version of myself. So that's awesome.
Right. There's no battles there. There's
well,
no battles.
I mean, no. There's of course there's battles. There's always, you know, inner turmoil.
But you know, you'd sabotage yourself if you stopped.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's what I. I learned
like
that from years of experience.
I would love
too.
What a beautiful world. You know, it's already a beautiful world. But the vision is if everybody can get to that point.
Sure. Yeah. I'm thankful, you know, every day of my life that I get to do what I'm doing now. But it's also with the stark awareness of what it was like to live without that voice before. And I don't wish that upon anyone. So there's that. But then there's, of course, now that I've taken it, now that I've completed that circle, I get to, like, you know, plug into other circles such as the community and see what happens when you engage the community with such words or intentions or interest and rally or sound a call of some sort, whether it's to poets or just any artist, to come and express themselves and complete their personal circle as well, and not let that energy be stifled or go stagnant.
Right. We're a team here in the Prescott Quad City, Five City area. Well, there's one of the main reasons I moved home is there's just so much of us here.
It's incredible the amount of talent and
artistry.
Yeah, the inspiration that I get from being in this area. I mean, that's a huge part of what I get from hosting these open microphones and allowing the community come together and open up a dialogue that is, I feel, all too uncommon for the amount of what we have to express here in this area, what we have inside us, and the things that we're seeing in the world, because we're such a global community. I mean, the Earth is evolving at such a rapid rate, and we are just rapidly becoming a global culture. And we're witnessing this evolution from this little corner of the world, and we have an incredible amount of insight. And I say that partly from experience and partly as a challenge to anybody who's listening to this to get out there and share what you have and what you know with all of us, because we're all too eager to hear it.
Yeah.
And so
you don't want to be Van Gogh in a corner cutting your hair off. Right? If you promote yourself and you get yourself where you need to be, you don't have to borrow your brother's money and get hooked on absinthe. You go out there and you do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I feel like I'm just at the beginning of my own journey in finding out a way to sustain myself as an artist and be able to, you know, live a life where art is an everyday experience, but it's no less profound in that, you know, that it's an everyday thing.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you so much. I've got some great guests today here on the Mile High Show. This is Danny Fisher with Kaleidoscope. We've got KJ and Nebs. He can tell you his full name before they start performing. We're going to have each of our friends here perform. You can also find these guys every second Wednesday at the Bistro, which is on McCormick Street. Great cause. The owner is amazing. There's two animal rescues there. Part of the proceeds go to helping dogs and horses. And are you still working under Decipherous Anonymous?
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. our collective's name.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you can find them every second Wednesday on McCormick Street at the Bistro. With art, there is always a price. iTunes, please click the big main photo on themilehighshow.com and go to our iTunes page. Give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review. Help the Mile High Show get some more visibility. Click on the main photo at themilehighshow.com. Go to your iTunes page and give us a review. You can also find archives of older shows. So if you want to get a copy for yourself, you can do that there. Before we get these men here to perform, I wanted to remind you that the process of this show is to get you out and performing or writing or doing art or creating what you need to. If it's wine, go make it. If it's jelly, go make it. And if you're making a masterpiece mosaic, go do it. Get started. Find a way and find your path. One story I had from this area in Prescott, since there's so many creative people, is when I formerly lived here 6 years ago, we had a friend who was a Vietnam vet who lived in Ash Fork, which I guess Ash Fork, that would make a sex city area. I like how that sounds.
Oh, yeah.
But
put it that way.
Right.
Oh, I want to live here.
Right. And my friend was William Wiedenbacher. He was a Vietnam vet and he lived in Ash Fork on 10 acres and he had no running water. And I had another Vietnam vet friend that taught me pottery. So again, art was the connection. They taught me raku pottery, a specific kind. I was already an artist and a teacher. But William Wiedenbacher was a good 350 pounds and grumpy and a Vietnam vet and looked like sad face. Not a lot to say. And I lived in Chino at the time, and every week he needed a shower. And so, you know, I talked to my husband at the time, and my other friend that taught me raku pottery and his buddy Wiedenbacher would come to my house and they'd take a shower. And man, it was, I don't even want to talk about it. If you're a country girl and you have horses and dogs, you know what I'm saying. But I cleaned that shower afterwards. Anyway, William Wiedenbacher I offered him clay and I started talking to him and I wanted him to do clay with me and take classes, and he wound up doing clay with me and we raccooned it and it was this amazing picture.
Cool.
Because of that, he started taking classes at Prescott College. And not only did he have a property out in Ashford, but moved closer to town in Ponderosa Pines because of the inspiration of the art for him. Wow. The next thing you know, he's taking classes with college kids. He's wearing tie-dye shirts, making them himself. Like, his whole life changed. And he taught me. He's the one that taught me. And when he died, I inherited all his art supplies. He taught me make a painting a day, even if it's a sketch or something, draw something every day. Because if you take 30 days, if it's an average of 30 days and you have one piece, even if it's only $30, look at what you're making, you know, because we have to think of the structure of making a living off of this. Anyway, he came out of his show, wound up becoming vegan. Lost 75 pounds.
Mm.
You know, this man, like ambitious. The healing part of what we get from doing what we're supposed to do so that you don't feel yucky, so that your back doesn't hurt, or you don't have a cold, or, you know, or you're not over drinking because you're trying to shove your inspirations aside. He overcame so much, but because it was so late in his process, he had passed away, and his family came to stay with us. He was from Woodstock, New York, and his family came to stay with us, and I got to make his urn, and he's in the memorial over there. But just right there, you know, how much better was his life just for knowing what
he knew. Finding that release
and being that link and just being a witness of that stuff. That is just some beautiful stuff. So here we are, and who wants to perform first?
1, 2, 3, not it.
Ah!
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna give you about 10 minutes each. Whatever you got, it's fine.
Do you have a preference?
I don't care.
Say yourself again. Say your name again.
I'm Nebulia Synapticus, and I think I'll start with one that's inspired by the bards of old, and I mean, I consider myself to be a very present day poet, but I'm inspired by all forms of poetry, and I think that this one, it really really works well with the Kaleidoscope show and what we're doing here. So this is called "To Tap the Well Deep Within." To tap the well deep within, a sacred blessing I send to thee. The wisest of all ages have told, imagination is the key. And of the many cages opened in order to set us free, to tap the well deep within and quench thirst of seeker's plea. To tap the well deep within, a drink that soothes the soul, to bless all our relations and see the measure of our control, to see the heart behind our thought, the parts of every whole, to tap the well deep within for whom the bell shall toll. To tap the well deep within and dive into our deepest sea and capture something of meaning for all men of merit to see. Whether seeking through discipline of mind or the blissful rush of the lotus tea, to tap the well deep within, a sacred blessing I send to thee.
I'm trying to snap into the microphone. Can you hear it?
Thank you. This one is a very different inspiration from modern civilization. This is called "The Light We Know." We must be well known throughout the galaxy. Who else is so bold as to light up the dark side of their planet the way we do? Sending luminous cryptic signals like constellations into the night shadow beyond our world. Surely passersby would not miss this glowing mark of distinction, even if backlit by the brightest yellow star mere minutes away and 1,000 others chiming in from a roomy distance. I'm sure it has been noted how we mark the passing of our sun, how we do the night in style, how we love the light. But this too we know, the discomfort of being in well-lit shelter as evening falls to its depths and peering into the darkness, unable to make out the beyond, our vision smothered by the surrounding pollution of illumination, our sight trapped in the dull reflection of an otherwise clear window. When we become aware that perhaps something is going on out there, outside the reach of our artificial beams, we like to see. But then our glorious lighting array seems only self-absorbed, limiting. The very tools we use to perceive our surroundings become the obstruction to further perception. We may come to feel deprived of the regular nighttime visitations of the light of our distant cousins, the congregations of stars our ancestors took such pains to map and to study in order to, among other passions, determine our place in the universe. Is this reality rotating around us, or are we spinning in its midst? And is there an important difference between the two? Shall we feel any more or less important as we leverage the very privilege to reveal the underlying mechanics of this very space around us? As we peer into the depths of every frontier our minds can possibly fathom? We are told that to see is to comprehend. We commonly use sight and even light itself as a metaphor for understanding. I see what you are saying. She shed light on the subject. The enlightened one saw right through me. We direct our light onto objects and spaces we wish to observe day and night, sometimes without end. The more light we produce, the more detail we discern. The more we differentiate this from that. And so I wonder, what is it to be seen? I think of the light we pour onto our premier stages and lurid catwalks, our ominous banks and prisons and stately buildings of governance, our quietly pronounced places of worship, our touted private galleries and public artworks, our high-flown flags and spotlit products for sale, our far-reaching roadways and runways and waterways and any vehicles we may traverse them in, from our rushing downtown street corners to our very own distinct driveways, walkways, warmly lit front porches, through our warm living rooms and warmer kitchens, our center of the universe warm bathroom vanities, and altogether our lives, our warmly lit from every angle selves. Do they see us? Do they know us better, even if they often avoid the path between our blue planet and our star, instead preferring the course along the outskirts of our solar system? Does our need to be seen come off as desperate? For it is not a night that goes by that we do not send out our gleaming beacon into the dark unknown. In fact, in slow motion, the sunless side of our planet is unceasingly shining, shining, shining. If anyone might care to notice. It would seem we do very much wish to be seen, and maybe to be understood. We must be well known throughout the galaxy.
Mm.
That's the light we know.
Cheers.
Okay, so Danny asked me to do a little bit of beatboxing, and so
thank
I wanted
you.
To... do a poem that is
I'm selfish, maybe.
No, it's a great request. I think it's time that
a viable request.
Yes,
I'll see if I can what I got in me. But I wanted to start it off with a poem that's more inspired by hip hop, which is a huge part of poetry for me, and. I think what it means to be a poet in the present day is to have some relationship with hip hop, and that can be defined in many different ways.
Cool.
And this one also speaks to the thought that hip hop is really you know, gangster rap as if that is that defines hip hop.
Right.
Yo, yo.
Just ignore it then, right? We'll just ignore it. It doesn't exist.
No, that's gangster rap?
No, or just in general hip hop or anything.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Ignoring the entirety of it because there is, you know, that inside it. But I feel like that's a small part of it, and it's an important part of it, but there's a lot of different aspects to it, and maybe you'll be inspired to look at this in some kind of a different perspective. Being the title here, Inside the Player's Game. I dig in intimately, splitting schisms when I spit a riff. Isn't it exquisite? It still fits after you flip a script and slip it into consciousness and vindicate the hypnotist. Settle into states of mind to help to find a little bliss. A little kiss, a simple gift we give and take to get a lift. Loving life with highest flight of fancy, no prerequisite. Maybe hate it when the players state it all a business trip, but I'll put game inside your mainframe. All the same, it's fellowship. Yeah. I dig in intimately, splitting schisms when I spit a riff. Isn't it exquisite? It still fits after you flip a script and slip it into consciousness and vindicate the hypnotist. Settle into states of mind to help to find a little bliss. A little kiss, a simple gift we give and take to get a lift. Love and life with highest flight of fancy, no prerequisite. Maybe hate it when the players state it all a business trip, but I'll put game inside your mainframe all the same. It's fellowship.
Right, so I don't have to snap for that. I can clap.
This is why my job is so fun. I am selfish. Oh,
that's awesome. Good job.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you. You're on the Mile High Show. We're sitting here today at Granite Mountain Brewing. Every Wednesday is Hoppy Hump Day. So you get, I said it right, that's like a tongue twister for me. So you get $1 off pints, and we've also got the Mile High Artist League right here up on the wall. We have exhibits every time. So you just heard Neb. Mm-hmm. And now we're moving on to KJ.
Piece for the eyes
that, that was 10 minutes already. That was it.
Oh, we're up. You've been doing pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just, it went by fast.
I'm having so much fun, I can't even look at that thing.
Sure,
but I know
Matt's
got to take his equipment somewhere
that's
else.
Good finale. I didn't know that was your finale. That's a good finale.
Oh,
well, I'm going to keep pulling.
No, I'm just getting warmed up for you. I'm just getting warmed up.
Oh, really? Well, are you good? Do you
think I just have.
Can you guys take this part over?
Yeah. Is it my turn? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you got to you got to give us some poetry. Okay.
Time for poetry.
We need to be inspired.
Okay.
We have time for you again if you want to close. So give him his time. We don't have to be right at an hour. Were you guys sleeping?
We'll see where the inspiration
comes. Were you sleeping for the rules?
No, it's... What? It's all happening so fast, Danny. It's all happening so fast.
Right. But what I told Neb over here is when he was concerned, I'm like, if you're looking to me, I'm like, I'm supportive, but I'm kind of supportive in that kick your butt kind of way. So
we all need a whipping once in a while.
No. So get going. I'm just facilitating.
Some tough love out there.
Same
there
for you out there, your audience. Get up off your butts. Try this stuff. Try it at home. Do try it at home.
Yeah.
Don't not.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Say yes to new things and new experiences. Who knows what might happen to you?
Say yes to Neb.
Yeah, that
here's
too.
KJ.
Okay, yeah. All right, so here's a couple poems for you, I guess. I'm still like second guessing which ones I want to do. But I mean, partly because I hear yours and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, because I do have like an answer. I could answer like to two of yours, but let's not parallel and be the same too much.
Well,
you know,
maybe we need to go out into a whole nother realm. Our audience wants to hear something complete, a different perspective.
Sure. All right, let's do Ode to Perseverance. Let's start with that one. Let's start with a little. This is an older piece of mine, like 2000, back then, that kind of old. but it was kind of, you know, it's definitely influenced by hip hop. Speaking of that, I only started writing in this style like after I really started listening to hip hop, which didn't happen that early in life. I guess I really got into it when I was about 18 or so. And so suddenly, like with this new music bombarding my brain with amazing words and styles and inflections and what have you, suddenly my brain started being able to like play with those words in similar ways. So this is one of the earlier poems that came out of that. It's called Ode to Perseverance. Don't you know wherever you go, there's a flow of life like undertow that doesn't know what's right or fast from slow. It's just a part of life we undergo. That's why when it rains, it pours. It drains scores of pains and sores into your veins and pores, engaging your brains in wars with all of life's strains and horrors. To all that remains is little spores of your former self. Before your wealth of mental health fell off a sanity shelf into insanity's hell where all our vanities dwell, with demons and heathens that have been branded as well. And you'll be stranded until you take command of your will and understand that you still have a hand in this deal. For your life may be damned to a battle uphill, but the choice to withstand is one pain cannot steal. It is you who must steal your life back from the wheel of misfortune and heal wounds that'll become surreal. Once you climb that damned hill that's as high as a landfill, finally stand still and let what you find fill like a wind-to-windmill, your heart with purpose and pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
KJ here on the Mile High Show.
Thank you. So there's something of what I do, I guess. I kind of got into poetry through rhyme, but definitely not in that kind of style. More in like song lyric style and you know Longfellow and stuff like that. I'm supposed to be smiling now, apparently. awkward smile while people take pictures. Well, that's neat. This is the radio. There's not supposed to be visuals.
I didn't even brush my teeth.
I know. I didn't dress the part.
That was yeah. I know. At least I chewed some gum to freshen my breath. So that helps, right?
Well, I don't think they're gonna smell.
Oh, they're not. No. Oh, okay. So that sounded like a blonde joke, right?
Snap.
So there you go. So that's kind of the rhyme side of things. But of course, there's a whole other side to poetry that I eventually stumbled into or broke into and started writing in free verse and just, you know, any style. I've tried to incorporate it all. So let me give you. We were talking. Let me give you something that's not rhymed. We were talking doing a lot of advocation for the arts the past few minutes, I guess. I was thinking about doing How to Bleed, but I feel like I've done that one a lot lately. So let me do a short one that kind of does that, kind of touches on that or suggests that. It's called Poeticket. But it only became named that after I read it for the first time at an open mic down the street here at Peregrine. And it had like a working title, and then somebody said the word Poeticket during that event, and I was like, oh, that's I've never heard that word before. So now that's the title of this poem.
I like it.
But we'll see. We'll see if it's in my head or not. Here you go. There is a piece of poetry in all of us, waiting to be uncovered, like a dirty treasure or a touchy trigger that will hammer open a deepening realm, a steep cave, a windowless cathedral within that mountain of you, where the step of every word matters as it materializes before the dark in your eyes with reverence overdue, and offers to hold the weight of your life's meaning, bring it to light as you climb down inside yourself. If I had to give you directions, I might say, just past the Temple of Doom. Just keep going. You'll find it. Okay. So, yeah, that's how that goes.
That's how you got to die.
No, that was
right?
Perfect
yeah,
in here.
You know, it's there's this. It really is.
I just really appreciate. I don't know if it's the teacher in you guys, but you got the whole following the curriculum. You asked what the show was about. I told you.
Yeah.
And you have some pieces that are actually like tailored to my request. I feel
right
very special.
Find your voice. Express yourself. It's direly important. If you don't have some way of creating with your hands, that's a great way, but just creating something in some shape or form, If you don't, you're doing yourself a disservice, I promise
you.
Yeah,
and it's totally normal to feel incredible amount of anxiety. I think that poem really gets into that, you know, to really feel just a very deep-seated fear when you start exploring those realms
and really
get in there. It can be intimidating. So here's your little bit of inspiration, you know, is to hear.
Right, sometimes there's that part where it feels so obvious, like you don't want to... You know, sometimes, especially in the midst of work, when you're working, like the last patience you have is for someone that may not be completely educated on how important the arts are. And, you know, sometimes we just want to roll your eyes, but I've gotten to the point where I can't do that anymore. We're just going to have to never roll our eyes again and just keep educating.
Yeah.
Right?
Stop defunding the arts because they're freaking important.
Right? Are you crazy?
Yes.
So
should I do more?
Yes, please do. Absolutely. You are welcome to. A
couple more, I guess. I recently moved back to the country. I don't think I've mentioned that yet, but somehow I've gone like this whole time and I haven't said Bangkok once. That's amazing. It's pretty much everybody just hears about that all the time whenever they meet me, partly because I was living there for 8 years and I just moved to Prescott.
Big part of the inspiration.
So, yeah, exactly. That's where I kind of came back alive and rediscovered my craft and my purpose in life. So that's, you know, just those tiny things like that. And part of that awakening, though, in the midst of that, I knew even though life was wonderful and amazing and all did wonders for me out there, I knew I would have to come back home. I would have to come back to America. If not just because I have so much to say to America, and I had already written a lot in those first couple of years of writing again, and I just kind of, you know, you got to go back to the source, and I got to inject those words here, and so that's part of what I'm doing in this country for now. I do care, and there is a lot amiss or awry from top to bottom here in this land. And so I have a few words on that subject, just a few, by like hours and hours, but we're just going to do a short one for now. It's called The United States of Masquerade. And it was inspired, I don't mind saying, by watching a State of the Union address. And not that it had anything to do with the president at the time, but just watching our democracy in action, I guess, you know? The United States of Masquerade. It's confounding to think that the Matrix is real. That there's a system in place designed to make us all feel like we're as free as can be and not chained to a wheel turning livelihoods into the corporate ideal. Into purchasable goods programmed to buy goods and woods while paying little mind to the softly spoken shoulds. Engrossed as we are in our high-def neighborhoods where all the hype is overstated and nothing deep is understood. Where every other suicide comes as a surprise. And every school shooting feels like a reprise of a tragedy that happened just a week or so ago. Yet the eyes of Capitol Hill are focused on the money flow, in which oil-rich nation we'll next overthrow. How is it we've let ourselves get this low? We've trusted our leaders just a tad too much, and now a few bad apples have gone and spoiled the bunch. Our political arena has become an embroiled basket case, where anything goes as long as no one loses face, i.e. financial support, because they don't care about votes. Nowadays, politicians got more strings than most songs got notes. But they do their song and dance like they're representing us, then close the doors to do the bidding of their favorite lobbyists, who seem to have more power than all of us combined. And as their bosses overreach, our futures are undermined. For decades now, that's how the shots have been called, and it's taken us this long just to start to be appalled. It's unbelievable how long we've been standing to applaud a greedy oligarchy with a democratic facade.
Ouch.
I'm still trying to learn how to snap.
I can't snap for myself.
I got the microphone
America
between
says
my
ouch,
legs.
I gotta say,
I poke it in the eye. Finally.
Yeah, yeah, we're all a part of that. You know, we've all contributed to the situation that we're in now.
Classy.
So yeah, that's kind of the world I live in. I don't know if it's the world that
it was
everybody
like Dr.
Seuss.
It was very Dr.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
Right?
I've had students
awesome.
Like it was like what did
it's
they
like,
one of them said
it
was like
car.
It was like Dr.
Well, this
Seuss,
politician's
but,
a jerk.
Yeah. Well, it's hyperbolic like that.
Yeah, I guess
yeah.
so. Yeah.
I mean
very cool.
Interesting. All right, last one then. End with a calmer one of sorts. Well, I guess the second one was kind of calm.
Sure, but, and don't forget we're going to plug ourselves again.
Are we?
Yes.
Wait, when am
and
I supposed to do that?
After oh, you? Wait, we're going to talk a little. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No,
plug my bad.
Away.
All go
right.
for it.
All right, all right. So back to the note of reflection and the long, long process that you can unearth yourself with that. This poem is inspired definitely by experiences in Thailand and something I learned there on many levels. So I don't usually tell the title of it, but you'll figure it out. In a place called Bangkok, Thailand, there is a temple with a Buddha. It is a Buddha made of jade that shines like an emerald draped in gold. But before it became the most revered icon in the land, no one knew how beautiful it was. It was covered and stuck in layers of stucco to hide it from raiders centuries before. And it remained that way, hidden in plain sight for so long that nobody knew under this false exterior was a jewel. Until lightning struck and the building that held it burned down. They pulled the clay statue from the rubble and noticed that where it was damaged, it shone with green. They cracked and pulled all the mud away, and its magnificence was obvious to all. I think the story of that Buddha's life is the story of all our lives, however many we may have. From the day we are born, they begin, telling us what we are and what we are not. They cake this mud upon us of definitions and beliefs, prescribe limitations, until the inherent beauty of our being is hidden. So that by the time we can look at ourselves in the mirror, all we see is what they see. And maybe not even that. Maybe just what they tell us they see. Maybe just what they want us to see. Whatever they have carved into our heads. Sometimes such a limited amount of information, giving us no clue as to how great we really are. I think the story of that Buddha's life is the story of all our lives. And if you suspect that too, then you have to keep pulling back from what everyone has told you you are, till you have even pulled away from what society has told you to become. And maybe then you'll become something greater than our society has become.
Yeah.
Woo. Thank you.
Rap. You got go, any more?
No, no, that's good. Damn.
Go ahead. You can.
No,
say
I
something.
Was just thank you for having us on. It was a crazy experience. Like I've never done a podcast before. I don't think we've.
You,
ever
you
done
might
it,
need
so.
Your own now, so, huh? Is
no,
that what
no.
you're feeling?
Well, yeah. Ha ha ha. Sounds like a lot of work.
Wrapping up this. This day here at Granite Mountain Brewing, this is the Mile High Show. This is Danny Fisher, your host for Kaleidoscope, arts advocate type of show, not just for visual artists or musicians, but for all of you, because you should be living your life as art. And if you want me to argue with you, I can. If you need to find our guests for today, they're going to plug themselves one more time again. It's Mile High Show. You can find us on the web. There's milehighshow.com, also on Facebook. Also Danny Fisher, you can find me on Facebook, and I also have the Mile High Artist League as a Facebook one. My website is www.dannyfisher.com. if you want to get a hold of me, if you want to be on the show, if you want to refer a guest, or if you're just calling for some advice on how to get your creative spirit flowing, you can ask me. I'm not afraid. Again, we have KJ to our right. KJ, where we find you?
KJ Inc. Find me on the interwebs on that, Bandcamp or YouTube or my Facebook page. That's fairly active. And then, of course, at our show, Decipher Synonymous, we have a Facebook page for that as well. And we post monthly events on Facebook. And definitely come check us out and be a part of it. You know, see what's going on in your community, because there's some amazing things being expressed right now, and we're happy to be some kind of a conduit for that. It's pretty amazing experience for us too.
Incredible experience. This is Nebulia Synapticus. Write me an e-letter at deciphersyn@gmx.com, DeciphersYn@gmx.com. would love to hear from you and see if you get inspired from this show at all, or if you've been to some of our open mic events, or if you want to come to the next one. We'd love to hear from you. I'd love to see you there and hear what you have to say.
Thank you much for joining us.
Thank you, Danny.
Show.
Thank you.
Take it easy till next time.
Thanks, Danny.